We're recording, and so we are ready to roll.
All right. Well, I would like to bring this August 26th a meeting of the Renewal Enterprise District to order. Michelle, would you go ahead and take a roll call for us?
Sure. Supervisor Rabbit?
Here.
Supervisor Zane?
Aye. Here.
Chairperson Fleming?
Here.
We have a quorum, and Council Member Tibbetts is not able to attend today.
Okay. And so we then have some minutes to approve. Has everybody read the minutes in detail and got their corrections ready for us?
Yes.
All right. Actually, can we back up a step here, Chair Fleming?
Sure.
And ask for approval of the agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I read minutes, not approval. My bad. Can I get an approval of the agenda?
Yes.
Great.
Great.
And then we can move on to item number two.
Okay. So we'll item two, public comment on matters not listed on the agenda within the subject matter of the red. Do we have anybody wishing to make live public comment?
Hannah, do you see anybody?
And I see no hands raised.
Okay.
And Chair Fleming, we didn't receive any pre-recorded public comment either, nor did we receive any emailed public comment. I would have email those to you in advance of the meeting had we received anything.
Excellent, thank you. Consent calendar. Does anybody have anything that they would like to pull from the consent calendar? Okay, so just for the listening public, we've got approval of the July 22 minutes, which I prematurely asked for earlier, approval of the year-to-date financial report, authorization of the executive director to enter memorandum of understanding to collaborate with Generation Housing for submission of a grant application supportive of shared housing goals, and then authorizing the RED executive director to apply for a $90,000 Kaiser Permanente fire recovery grant. And then there are no presentations, so does the board have any questions about those items? Okay, I'll entertain a motion to move the consent calendar.
And second,
can we back up one step and ask if there's any public comment?
Yes, thank you. Is there any public comment?
I see no hands raised.
And nothing was submitted in advance.
Great. So with that, now I believe we are ready to take a vote. Michelle, would you ask us for a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Supervisor Rabbit?
Aye.
Supervisor Zane?
Aye.
Chairperson Fleming?
Aye.
And we'll record an absent vote for Councilmember Tibbetts.
Okay. Item four, amendment to the bylaws and resolution setting meeting dates and location. Michelle, would you make our presentation, please?
Sure. Let me share my screen here. Just a moment. All right, thank you for your patience. So this item requests that the board consider an amendment to the RED's bylaws to allow for board meeting dates to be adopted by resolution, and also to consider a resolution setting the regular meeting time and place from the fourth Wednesday of every other month to the fourth Monday of every other month. The bylaws, as they're currently written, require an amendment to do something as seemingly simple as changing our regular meeting location or date. It may be useful looking forward to provide more flexibility in the bylaws. To add flexibility, the bylaws can be amended to provide that the meeting date and time be set by resolution of the board as allowed by the Joint Powers of Exercise Agreement. And then you would only need to amend a resolution rather than the full set of bylaws if the board seeks to change the meeting date and time in the future. There's no question we exist in a very dynamic operating environment these days. We're meeting virtually for the foreseeable future. Board members have new responsibilities professionally and personally in response to coronavirus and other disasters. To uncomplicate the matter, Red Council came up with an elegant, pretty simple amendment to Section 5.1 of the bylaws with the proposed language before you stating, all regular meetings of the board shall be held at the location and time set forth in a resolution adopted by the Board of Directors. The second decision before you today asks you to consider approving a resolution moving the regular board meeting time and place from the fourth Wednesday of every other month to the fourth Monday of every other month at the SCTA boardroom or on a virtual platform as allowed by the governor's executive orders through the end of 2020 or until such time as the Sonoma County health orders modified to allow for in-person assembly for the purposes of public meetings. The resolution also includes flexibility to amend the time of the meeting in the event of an emergency. That concludes my presentation and happy to answer any questions you might have and hear any comments the board has.
Thank you, Michelle. Do any of the board members have any questions or comments?
Let me stop sharing my screen and then maybe I'll be able to see if anybody's hand is raised.
Supervisor,
or you can physically raise hands.
Unmuted herself, so I'm going to take that as a hand raised.
Supervisor Zane?
Oh, I didn't hear you say me. I thought you said Rabbit. I'm just going to say the whole flexibility thing in terms of bylaws, given the world that we're living in right now, is a really good thing. I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anything from you, Mr. Rabbit?
I'm good with flexibility. I'm on two meetings as we speak, so I think we need more flexibility, not less.
Okay. Do we have any comments from the public?
And I see no raised hands.
And we didn't receive anything in advance.
Okay. Well, I just want to thank both of the supervisors for their support in this matter. It means the world to me because of, you know, this whole world has changed with my abilities and so forth. And I can always reliably show up on a Monday. And so, you know, you guys doing this action is really like putting, you know, your actions where our words have been around equity, both at the city and the county. And it really means a lot to me. And I feel very supported by you guys, as well as Michelle and Hannah in this, being able to continue in this leadership position. So I'm very grateful. So with that, let's take a vote.
So should we take it action by action, Chair Fleming?
Let's do it action by action, if you think that that's cleaner. Okay.
All right, so recommend it. I'm sorry.
Would you like me to ask for a motion?
Sure, that would be fantastic.
Might I get a motion to approve and amend the bylaws?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All right, and I'll do the roll call vote now on recommended action number one. Supervisor Zane?
Aye.
Supervisor Rabbit?
Aye.
Chairperson Fleming?
Aye.
And we'll record an absent for Council Member Tibbetts. And then we'll move on to recommended action number two. Do you want to read it or shall I, Chair Fleming?
So adopt a resolution setting the meeting time and location for regular board meetings and changing the regular meeting time and place from the fourth Wednesday of every other month to the fourth Monday of every other month. Might I get a second?
Yeah, that doesn't, I just one quick, that doesn't interact with SCTA, right?
I checked in advance. No, it doesn't.
Okay. So moved.
Great.
Second.
And I'll conduct the roll call. Supervisor Rabbit?
Aye.
Supervisor Zane?
Aye.
Chairperson Fleming?
Aye.
And we'll record an absent vote for Councilmember Tibbetts.
All right, we are taking care of business. So let's move on to item, what are we at? 4B, review and consider approval of fiscal year 2020-2021 final budget. And again, Ms. Whitman, please take it away.
All right, it'll take me just a moment to share my screen.
Take your time.
All right, here we are. We're going to consider the final budget for the fiscal year 2020-2021. So the REDS Joint Powers of Exercise Agreement states that your board will be presented with a preliminary budget for the coming fiscal year no later than 60 days before the end of the preceding fiscal year. Your board approved the preliminary budget back on April 23rd. The board is familiar with the financial history of the RED, but just very briefly in review, a $1 million Hewlett Foundation grant was awarded in August 2018 with the Sonoma County Transportation Authority functioning as the funds manager. The RED JPA was formed in December 2018 and financial responsibility transferred to the RED in November 2019. With approval from both the SCTA and RED boards. The preliminary budget for fiscal year 2020-2021 was $608,930, a 13% reduction from the previous fiscal year. The final fiscal year 2020-2021 budget is $587,300, a 16% decrease from the previous fiscal year. We'll take a more detailed look at the final budget on the next slide. But as a reminder, our Hewlett Foundation grant was set to be distributed in two $500,000 installments. We've requested the second installment and have been informed it will be wired to the Auditor Controller's Office, which is the RED's treasurer, by the end of this month. Here we are looking side by side at the proposed final budget as well as the preliminary budget approved in April. Upon closing the previous fiscal year, it was clear that the starting fund balance would be approximately $20,000 lower than originally projected, due mainly to unanticipated invoices from the Sonoma County Transportation Authority for their housing-related work that benefits the RED. Looking forward, if the RED were to receive no other revenue in this fiscal year, $587,300 is the funding we have to work with. The bottom line is that if there are no additional revenue sources developed, the RED is funded through the end of fiscal year 2020-2021 with a nominal ending fund balance projected to be just over $2,000, $2,023. Now, a little more detail, looking first at expenditures. As the RED is essentially a contract governmental entity, the largest expense is associated with consulting services, including executive director, general counsel, strategic planning, auditor, accounting services, and grant writing technical assistance, among others, totaling $307,200, or 53% of total budgeted expenses. The second largest expenditure item is a RED grant to a housing project totaling $250,000, or 43% of total expenditures. Contributions to other governments, budgeted at $20,000, pays for city and county staff time used for the benefit of the RED, as well as grants made to those governments. Administration services and supplies includes office supplies and equipment, travel, and insurance. Finally, this slide depicts how the last fiscal year wrapped up next to side-by-side final and preliminary budgets. Since standing up the RED, its members' jurisdictions have borne the primary burdens of responding to unprecedented emergencies, including public safety power shutoffs, the Kincaid fire, a homeless crisis, COVID-19, and now the Myers and Walbridge fires, each with associated economic fallout and impacts to local budgets, not to mention the effects on state and federal budgets. This repetitively destabilizing operating environment means we do not yet know it precisely what the RED will ultimately evolve into and what the accompanying resource needs will be. While we face uncertainty in the environment we operate in, we use the fiscal year 2019-2020 budget as a compass for building first the fiscal year 2020-2021 preliminary budget and final budget. Finally, before I leave this slide, I want to take, let me start over. Finally, before I leave this slide to take your comments or questions, as was addressed on the consent calendar, the RED has been invited by Kaiser Permanente to apply for, and we expect to receive a $90,000 grant to move forward with the effort to design, and if directed by the RED board to do so, implement a new housing fund. The RED has several grant requests under consideration potential funders and continues to search for additional resources to fully fund this initiative. In order to maintain momentum achieved in phase one, and due to the urgent need to increase housing inventory, the RED, I'm going to request that a $50,000 line item designated for strategic planning, which is included under consulting services, be made available to begin work on phase two of the housing fund initiative as bridge funding in anticipation of grant awards. As grant awards are received, it is my intention to replenish the strategic planning line item to essentially pay ourselves back. With regard to the Kaiser Permanente grant, in their invitation, they cited a start date of October 1st. So I'm presuming that that means we would have funding in advance of October 1st. So again, I want to make clear that no final decision on fund creation has been made by the RED Board, and such a decision is not suggested by this agenda item or this request. Authorizing phase two work to proceed does not obligate the RED Board to create a fund. A final decision on fund creation will depend on the successful conclusion of phase two activities. As phase two work progresses, regular updates, reports, and key policy decisions will be presented Board for public deliberation during your regularly scheduled board meetings. That concludes my presentation, and I'd like to invite board member questions or comments on the final budget. I'll stop sharing my screen unless asked to go back to any of the slides that we just looked at.
Board members, jump in.
Yeah, I have just a question. In terms of all the monies that we've recently acquired from the state grants, how does that figure into our budget? Is there no overhead built into those grants in terms of the staff obtaining them?
The RED's role in those grant awards was to provide technical assistance, to convene all of the associated fees, and to, you know, shepherd the grant applications through the system. The RED could not be an applicant on any of those grants. The RED is a joint powers authority, and a joint powers authority is not an eligible applicant. So the RED is not going to be the recipient of any of those grant proceeds. They go to the housing developers, the City of Santa Rosa, the CDC, as joint applicants, and SMART actually. So no, none of that money ends up in the REDS budget.
But why can't we get shepherding fees?
Because we're not an eligible applicant as a joint powers authority.
Okay, I guess. It just seems like, you know, consultants charge so much money and you're acting as a consultant and making things happen and convening all the players and writing the proposals, and there should be some type of compensation for all that, but that's what I think.
I like what you're thinking. Unfortunately, that's not the way these particular grants are set up. It is its own reward. It's contributing to the Renewal Enterprise District's purpose and reason for existing. So it's your board invested both financially and in kind by granting me my staff time to work on those proposals. You also paid for the grant writer, the grant consultant for the infill infrastructure grant. So the RED is invested, the RED can claim to be part of the team that was successful in capturing these awards. Unfortunately, those grants are not going to be a revenue stream for the RED.
Okay, we should keep that in mind, yeah.
Noted.
With very little investment though, the RED, besides the in-kind investment, I'm sorry to have interrupted Chairwoman, but the RED's portion of the grant writer was $11,200. And that particular grant application captured nearly $12 million in funding. So a great return on your investment.
Yeah, there's no doubt there's a great return on the investment. I just want to make sure that we're sustainable and that your time and your efforts are sustainable. That's my motive for asking the question. So, okay, maybe couldn't the grant writer put into the proposals? I mean, I have written lots and lots of grants before that part of the budget is, some type of fee to the RED as a JPA. I mean, you know, we're not hindered from bringing in money as a JPA. We still have to sustain ourselves and move forward on behalf of our mission, so.
And I appreciate the question and the spirit of it. In advance of those applications going in fact, when the draft guidelines were still in draft form, we did submit comments and certainly made verbal requests along the way to open the program to joint powers authorities as an eligible applicant. The next round is upcoming and we can make the same request. I'm not sure that we'll be successful, but we'll keep hammering away on that point.
Okay, great, thank you.
Okay, excellent point there from Supervisor Zane. Anybody else?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairwoman. The burn rate on the 53% of the budget, the 307, Michelle, has that slowed since we've, in this last half of the fiscal year?
I reduced some of the line items so that the burn rate remains the same. It still gets us through the end of the fiscal year. We just had to do some belt tightening on a couple of the line items.
And I guess that's what I meant, was that the burn rate of our spending, RED spending, has tried to slow on some of those. And I know that it's difficult, and as you know, that's always a pet peeve of the overhead costs that we incur are just high, to say the least. The $90,000 Kaiser grant, does that allow you, that's not for the housing fund itself, it's allow you to form the housing fund, so that is administrative kind of overhead and whatnot, is that correct?
That is to fund Forsyth Street Advisors phase two work plan.
Okay. And I take it that most of the grants, they already, you have to adhere to the criteria that's already set, and that's the downside of that, and as well as the JPA prohibition.
Right. And then during my executive director's report, which is up next, I plan to talk about some of the organizations that I've applied to for funding, specifically to fund that phase two scope of work.
Okay.
And happily, Kaiser has a strong interest and is pretty committed to funding the lion's share of it. There are, I'll go through the list of organizations I have either letters of introduction out to, or proposals, or applications. And some of them simply will not fund a government agency. They won't fund anything but a 501c3. So we're a non-starter with those organizations. There are others where we just don't fit into their programming. And then others that I think we're going to have a good chance with.
Okay. All right, well, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate the question.
Okay, so moving on to public comments. Do we have anybody? I see in our listening public, we have Suzanne Smith. So if Suzanne doesn't want to comment, I suppose we will. You can though, *9. We can move on to our email or pre-recorded public comments.
We didn't receive any pre-recorded public comment, and I don't have anything that's been received via email.
All right, then. So the recommended action here is to approve fiscal year 2021 final budget with adjustments and approve budget resolution. What say you, supervisors?
So moved.
Second.
And Ms. Whitman. Roll call. Supervisor Rabbit?
Aye.
Supervisor Zane?
Aye.
Chairperson Fleming?
Aye.
And we'll record an absent vote for Council Member Tibbetts.
All right. Item 5, Executive Director Report. Again, Michelle.
All right, here we go. So as a couple of previous agenda items addressed at the July 22nd Red Board meeting, your board granted me authority to identify or pursue funding to support the Housing Fund Advisors Phase 2 scope of work. Following board direction, significant effort in the past few weeks was spent submitting, like I said, letters of introduction, applications, and proposals to a range of potential grant makers, including Kaiser Permanente, Providence St. Joseph Health, Bank of America Foundation, Ford Foundation, Wells Fargo, Poppy Bank, the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, the Medtronic Foundation, Exchange Bank, Enterprise Community Partners, and United Way of the Wine Country Rebuild North Bay. As we just discussed, Kaiser Permanente did with the invitation to apply for the $90,000 grant. Several funding requests were denied, as I just spoke about. The denials, like I said, had the two themes, either that we weren't a 501c3 or that we didn't fit their programmatic areas. Believe me, I tried to convince them otherwise, that we did fit their programmatic areas. So I'll continue to pursue the entire $150,000 of the cost of phase two scope of work for the Forsyth Street Advisors effort to go through the steps to create a housing fund. And again, I want to reiterate that no final decision on fund creation has been made by the Red Board, and commencing with phase two does not obligate the Red Board to create a fund. Okay. So targeted effort went into the following priorities as well. I provided technical support to developers for the transit-oriented development grant, and Also future infill infrastructure grant and affordable housing sustainable communities applications. I continued stakeholder outreach and relationship building within the housing production, financial, tribal, and philanthropic communities. I continue operation of a remote office in response to shelter in place orders. I do sneak into my office at City Hall now and then, usually at strange hours, so that I reduce my exposure to them and their exposure to me, mainly to archive files that need stored on more than just my portable hard drive here in my remote office. I'm still participating in the California Coalition for Rural Housing Disaster Recovery Prevention Committee, which is now expanded to COVID-19 and the challenges faced by new natural disasters in addition to the pandemic. I'm participating in a housing production work group for California Housing Partnership, certainly maintaining and updating our website continually. I attend public meetings featuring local housing projects, including the city's design review board. I'm advocating for local housing related grant applications, participating in various trainings, including Brown Act and housing finance programs, general administration, including our insurance renewals, advice from legal counsel, budgeting and accounting functions, in addition to building these board agendas, takes up a good chunk of my time. Certainly attending and participating in virtual community meetings, participating again on my own time and at my own expense in diversity, equity, and inclusion training through Cornell University, and having regular meetings with elected officials and public sector staff. Despite our shelter in place orders, advancing the RED's objectives and goals is definitely dependent on collaborative relationships. Any success and progress that we've made so far has been because of collaboration. The RED is part of a greater network cooperating to produce housing, and a list of policymaker, public agency, stakeholder, and community member engagements since our last meeting includes California Coalition for Rural Housing, Generation Housing, State of California Housing and Community Development, Enterprise Community Partners, local affordable housing advocates, local and state elected officials, and the Sonoma County Economic Development Board Community Recovery Work Group. As is the case for all of our organizations, in-person community meetings and conferences that the RED was to present at been canceled or postponed, but to compensate, there's been increased engagement in the virtual meeting space. So, with regard to planned effort, the focus for September and October will be on phase two work to capitalize the housing fund that we've been discussing, in addition to capacity building and the continued pursuit of a sustainable source of funding for the RED. I maintain my work to align local housing projects with state and federal funding resources. Work will continue as we go into the next rounds of the infill infrastructure and affordable housing sustainable communities grants. However, the pot of money that will be available is going to be reduced. We know that, for example, the infill infrastructure grant that had a pot of money of close to $200 million in the last round is going to be down to more like $49 million in the next round. So those programs will be oversubscribed, but that doesn't mean that we don't reach for them. Let's see. And we're working collaboratively with stakeholders to present Sonoma County Housing as integral to a greater system of a greater system connected to health, environment, education, and the economy. The health connection is just so stark after seeing what COVID-19 has done to communities that are living in overcrowded housing. And the the residents living in those conditions do tend to work in essential service jobs that are public facing. Finally, I'm monitoring the governor's task force on business and jobs recovery for opportunities that can advance the RED's mission to work across jurisdictions to market and attract developers, blend private financing and public funds, leverage state and federal grants, and facilitate creation of housing that meets your established public policy goals, both with the Board of Supervisors and the City Council. And always keeping an our eye on access to transit, protection of open space and community separators, improved energy efficiency, climate resilience and affordability in the effort to advance and ensure equitable access to housing. So that concludes my executive director's report, and certainly happy to answer any questions or hear any comments the board might have.
Well, thank you so much for all that you're doing in such a comprehensive report. Supervisors, any questions or comments?
Yeah, I was just gonna say, Michelle makes it look easy, and all we have to do is show up to the board, basically, give our opinions. So I just want to say how much I appreciate her and how hard she works, just with an incredible work ethic, which I got to see for many years, and bringing people to the table. I guess the one question I would have is that, what can we do as your board to bring other stakeholders to the table that we may still, that we would be advantageous for us to reach out to? And you don't have to answer that right now, but if you have an answer, great, but maybe you could just think about it and come back to us.
And you've all put that offer on the table in the past, and mm-hmm. I look for opportunities. You know, if we were operating in a normal environment, yeah. there would right. be more meetings that we would be going to in person. Chairperson Fleming and I believe Supervisor Rabbit participated in a public meeting with the committee at the state level that allocates tax credits, federal tax credits. Mm-hmm. So there was an opportunity to participate in that effort. You all have been just fantastic on your separate dioceses in being supportive of the RED. I know Chair Fleming is on a committee where she's trying to find additional support for the RED, a city committee, so I appreciate that. You have all expressed interest in considering allocating some of the PG&E settlement money as seed funding for a housing fund. You're all doing great. I feel like I'm very supported by the RED board. And I know where to find you all when we have additional opportunities to push and pull those levers.
Certainly the fires and COVID give us, I believe, a lot more opportunities. And as hard as it's been economically, especially on the small businesses and hospitality businesses in particular, I do believe that there is a silver lining and that there will be a lot more opportunities to continue to build in those places that we'd rather build in. I mean, you know, I was thinking about the homes that were lost, and every home that is lost is, you know, a horrible tragedy to the people who lose it in terms of all of their accumulation of their life and their memories and so many other things. But at the same time, you know, this particular fire, it raged through these forests that haven't burned in over 30 years. And when you do build homes out in those fire zones, there's always going to be that risk. So building more centrally and in terms of transportation, in terms of services, urban growth, it's become a whole new issue of safety for all of us
fueling the economy too, because these wildfires are horrifically expensive. And again, really, really hurt so many people. So while it's beautiful to live out in the country and out in the woods, and a lot of people continue to desire that, there's going to be increased risk, which we cannot unfortunately mitigate at this point, but we need to keep working on it given climate change. And I think this is a new reality for us that we will continue. I mean, you know, Ben Nichols said this week, you know, look, 99% of fires are actually started by people. But in this case, it was started by nature. And having these dry, striking lightning strikes that were just everywhere. So, you know, I guess in summary, what I'm trying to say is that there are other reasons for building centrally and in urban growth boundaries. And fire is certainly one of them in terms of reducing those risks. Not completely, as we saw Coffee Park burn down. So, you know, things happen when you have that type of wildfire.
But to your point, Supervisor Zane, if I could just jump in there and add on to what you're saying. Yeah. I've been meeting with developers who are interested in working in our downtown. And one of the things that, you know, when, first of all, I wanted to thank you guys for your leadership at the board for bringing up potentially using some PG&E money. And that allowed me to not only advocate for it, but to say, hey, you know, our supervisors are doing this. Let's not be left out in the cold here. So that leadership was incredibly important, but also talking with, you know, the developers and helping to make the connection so that when they do come and lobby, I ask them to support us in our request for funding. And that part of it is that we can make an argument that by supporting objectives like the RED has, we are building in ways that are more fire safe. So I'm excited to hear that coming from other folks as well, especially, you know, from both the board, that if we can get density in areas that historically don't burn, obviously there's flukes like Coffee Park, but if we can really densify in our areas, you know, I live in the junior college neighborhood, and one of the little girls in my neighborhood, I mean, she's not that little, she's almost 12, but she's, every time the fires come, the smokes comes, she gets online and she looks, well, where can, what hotel can we go to where they're going to take my pet and my da, 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 all this stuff. And I say, you know, this house has been here for 100 years, you know, and not that it's impossible for them to burn down, but it's really, really unlikely. And yeah. So, you know, just to see the fear on their faces and be able to say to them, you know, can't promise, but it seems a lot safer bet than, you know, up in the hills.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
But Michelle, you know, you're doing a fantastic job. And if this were different circumstances, I'd be wanting to convene our own, you know, coming out party, kind of like Jen H did on Zoom, but, you know, have a Christmas party and bring all of our favorite developers and community actors and, you know, all of these groups together to really see where we can have some spontaneous connections. And before it, it's a little bit of the hard part of COVID, but onward we press. So do we have any more comments from the board? Anything else you'd like to add?
And I'll just reinforce what Chairperson Fleming and Supervisor Zane just said. If you think about where a metropolitan fire department can best use its scarce resources if we've got a major fire event, housing in a more compact building environment is going to be easier to defend. You've got everybody, you know, kind of in one spot. And part of what's been so challenging about our recent fires is that there, we've got housing that is just so dispersed throughout our county. So those houses are wonderful and valuable, and we want to protect them, and we share the trauma when people lose their homes. Mm-hmm. But looking forward to where smart development should occur, it's really info.
Yeah. Our hearts definitely go out to everybody who's had a loss. Everyone. And,
you know, I wanted to add too that, you know, with the COVID, initially there was that feeling that, oh, we don't want to live in high density housing because it might make us more susceptible to these very contagious viruses. But I really, you know, I think that has proven otherwise, such as in cities in like Brooklyn and New York, you know, where there is high density housing, but you know, taking the right precautions is really what it's about in terms of not spreading the virus. Mm-hmm. And I believe that, you know, our downtown and other urban areas are going to continue to be attractive places for so many reasons.
Yep. And developers who are looking to come to Santa Rosa know what, you know, I was talking with one yesterday or the day before, and he was saying that they're looking at, you know, for smoke about how they can have like incredible ventilation systems, but also that stuff will work for viruses as well. So there's going to be a lot of technology that comes out and cleaner buildings and air standards. So with that, do we have any comments from our Suzanne Smith or any email or written comments?
We didn't receive any comments in advance of the meeting.
Okay. Well, there's no board action necessary for this item. And so our next item is a closed session item. So prior to closing, I will read the item and then ask for public comment, and then we will recess. And Michelle just send out the WebEx. Did everybody get those links? Okay. Is there any public comment on the Renewal Enterprise District Board employee performance evaluation for our executive director?
We didn't receive anything in advance.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, we will recess and then we will open again to report out in a few moments, hopefully. Okay.
All right. So the board members will leave the Zoom meeting, and you have a link in your text to join a WebEx meeting, and hopefully that will go smoothly. And if it doesn't, text me and we will help everybody through that process.
Yes, ma'am.
And Hannah, I'm going to pause. All right, Chair Fleming, you can bring us back.
All right. So I'm resuming the August 26th meeting of the Renewal Enterprise District. And we will move on to item 7, report out on closed session. Ms. Whitman, will you do that for us, please?
Sure, thank you, Chair Fleming. The board conducted a performance review of the RED Executive Director. Direction was given to staff and there's no reportable action. Thank you.
Great. And item 8 is adjournment, but prior to adjourning, I would like to adjourn this meeting in honor of the fact that today is the 100th anniversary of the adoption of the 19th Amendment. And just what a big deal that is. And I hope that everybody turns in their ballot ASAP. I will be turning mine in at 435 Fiscal Drive on County Campus, just as soon as I get it and fill it out and sign it. And so I invite everybody who's listening and Suzanne to do that too. But anyway, I'm super excited about the anniversary. It's a really big deal. So with that.
I just want to thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that. I was watching this thing on Frontline last night and I just almost had to turn it off several times because it was all about the growth of Amazon. And I think there was one person of color and one woman they talked to over in 2 hours. And I was going, you know, this is what's wrong with our world is that we need that equity. We need everybody to have their voice at the table. Everybody.
Yeah.
And we waited an awful long time. So God, I hope we end up with another woman in the White House soon.
Yeah. With that, our next Red Board meeting will be Wednesday, October 28, 2020 at 1 p.m. or Monday, October 26th, probably Monday, October 26th, since we moved that, right, Michelle?
That's right. Supervisor Rabbit is waving his hand, yep. Raising his hand.
Mr. Rabbit.
Waving goodbye. Thank you all.
Thank you for double screening and being in both meetings.
All right. Take care.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, guys. Take care.